And hello, everybody. Welcome to Outbeat Radio on KRCB, Windsor, Santa Rosa, a program that focuses on issues by, for, and or about members of the gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender communities. You can hear Outbeat Radio every Sunday night at 8 p.m.
This is Living Proof, and we're your hosts. I'm Dr. Diana Greyer, and next to me is my co-host and wife, Sheridan Gold. Tonight in studio, we have Ann McGivern joining us. Hello, Ann.
Hello, Diana.
Hello, Sheridan.
Hello, Ann.
And we also have, coming on shortly from New York City, her brother, Mark. And looking forward to talking with Mark on the telephone.
Mm-hmm. And for the listeners out there, what makes Anne's story so compelling is that when you meet her, she's just like this light. She's so dynamic and just so amazing and beautiful. And, you know, you can't help but being magnetized to her energy. You'd never know that she was prevented from seeing her siblings when her parents found out she was a lesbian.
And after 29 years of silence, her brother called her out of the blue, and they haven't stopped talking since. What a beautiful story. So stay tuned and listen to this heartfelt, compelling story. But first, we're going to have news and events with our Outbeat member, Greg Moralia.
I have found Outbeat Radio News, your source for LGBT news from the North Bay and beyond.
Good evening, this is Greg Moralia with your Outbeat Radio News for this Sunday, August 4th, 2013. Russian President Vladimir Putin signed a bill into law punishing people for homosexual propaganda, an official publication that has fueled a notable rise in hate crimes against LGBT people in that country. This means that merely wearing a rainbow flag on the outer clothing in public could land you in jail. Opponents have called the bill homophobic and so vaguely defined that it would inevitably be used arbitrarily and stir anti-gay sentiment in the country, and indeed it has. Several websites belonging to anti-LGBT groups, such as neo-Nazis, have featured images of young LGBT men being beaten, sexually assaulted with beer bottles, and doused in urine. So far, the Russian government has turned a blind eye to these horrific acts. But LGBT civil rights groups here in the U.S. aren't sitting idle. A new group called Americans United for LGBT Justice in Russia are calling for the U.S. and the international community to take action condemning this oppressive law. Stoli Vodka, a very visible sponsor of the LGBT community here in the U.S., is being targeted for a boycott. Bars in West Hollywood protested by pouring out Stoli Vodka into the street and refusing to serve it until the violence is stopped. And still others are advocating a boycott of the 2014 Winter Olympics that will be held in Sochi, Russia. In the latest warning to come from Russia's political leaders, Russian Sports Minister Vitaly Mutko earlier this week said that athletes and spectators attending the 2014 Games will be held accountable to the country's recent string of anti-LGBT legislation. And here locally, three children in Sonoma County were rescued from prostitution over the last 5 days during a national effort that the FBI said led to the recovery of 105 juveniles in 76 cities. Declaring child prostitution a persistent threat in America, the FBI announced the coordinated sweep dubbed Operation Cross Country resulted in the arrest of 159 alleged pimps. San Francisco FBI Special Agent in Charge, Dave Johnson, said Bay Area officers arrested 21 alleged pimps, including four in Sonoma County. The Sonoma County Sheriff's Office, as well as Santa Rosa, Petaluma, and Rohnert Park Police, participated in the national effort, which was organized by the FBI's decade-long Innocence Lost National Initiative. San Francisco FBI spokesman Peter Lee said that the Sonoma County teams focused on hotel operations, with officers posing as potential customers. Websites offering erotic services provided a key tool for finding juvenile prostitutes. The young people in the roundup, almost all of them girls, ranged in age from 13 to 17. Ron Hosko, assistant director of the Bureau's Criminal Investigation Division, said, "Child prostitution remains a persistent threat to children across the country. We're trying to put the spotlight on pimps and those who would exploit." The Justice Department estimated that nearly 450,000 children run away from home each year, and that one-third of teens living on the street will be lured toward prostitution within 48 hours of leaving the home. National reports have consistently noted the prevalence of LGBT youth in this homeless population. And finally, if you're a same-sex couple looking for a unique way to get married, we'd love to marry you on one of our upcoming radio shows. We'll provide an officiant, champagne toast, and a photographer. And of course, you'll get a recording of the entire ceremony. You can sign up on our website at www.outbeatnews.com. Now here's your calendar of events for the coming week. On Monday, August 5th, and every Monday at 5:30 p.m., the Petaluma Health Center will host an LGBT support group at 1179 North McDowell Boulevard in Petaluma. And on Tuesday, August 6th, from 10 a.m. to noon, the Napa LGBT Older Adults Discussion Group will gather at the Queen of the Valley Community Center, 3448 Villa Lane in Napa. And on Wednesday, August 7th at 5 p.m., Spectrum's Youth Support Group will gather at the Spectrum LGBT Center, 30 North San Pedro Road, Suite 12 in San Rafael. And on Thursday, August 8th at 7:30 p.m., PFLAG will meet at the Westminster Presbyterian Church, 240 Tiburon Boulevard in Mill Valley. And on Saturday, August 10th at 7 p.m., the Russian River Sisters present Under the Sea Bingo at Veterans Memorial Hall in Guerneville. The event benefits River to Coast Children's Services. The cost is $15 for one card, $20 for two. And you can purchase your tickets and learn more at rrsisters.org. And for more information about local LGBT events happening here in the North Bay, go to www.gaysonoma.com. And if you have news or an event you'd like to share with our listeners, tell us about it by going to our own website at outbeatnews.com. And be sure to follow us all week long on Facebook and Twitter for the latest LGBT news and information from here in the North Bay and beyond. For Gary Carnevale, I'm Greg Moralia. Now back to Living Proof with Sheridan Gold and Dr. Diana Greyer.
Outbeat Radio News, your source for LGBT news from the North Bay and beyond.
And this is Living Proof with Diana and Sheridan, Diana Greyer and Sheridan Gold. I'm Sheridan, and Diana is my co-host. Yeah. And we are online with Mark. Are you there, Mark?
Yes, I am.
Oh, hey there. How you doing? And we are in studio with Mark's sister, Anne McGivern. So hello again, Anne.
Hello to all of you, and hello, Mark.
Hi.
So, Mark, I'm looking forward to hearing your voice more, but I'm going to check in with Anne first and get us started at rolling, and then we're going to jump in with you, okay?
Sure.
Cool. So, Anne, I remember we're going to continue this focus on the Supreme Court decision. I remember when we talked, and that's how you got to be here on the radio tonight, is we talked at Hillsburg Bar and Grill.
Yep.
To celebrate this enormous victory, right?
Yes.
Should have been a long time ago, but we won't go there yet, right? But we talked, and it was beautiful connecting with you. So I just want to start from the beginning. It's like when you heard the news, when you heard the Supreme Court said, okay, reverse that. California, we can marry the LGBT. I mean, same-sex couples. Where were you, and how did you feel? How did you respond? What was your reaction?
I was home alone at my desk, and my first response was tears. I really just cried. I cried very deeply. And then I just heard myself sort of yell out loud, like, hallelujah. I'm not sure what it was, but it was a yippee skippy kind of moment. Like, and it was really interesting that it was this simple yippee and it's very deep crying.
Mm. Mm. Wow. Beautiful. So I remember talking with you and you said these words. Because Anne, let me just let everybody know that you've been involved in activism for a long time in around the Prop 8. Come on. So I want to let the audience know about your activism, and thank you so much for that. I want to just put that out there. Thank
goodness.
You so much for that.
Thank hundreds of thousands of us.
Yes. So what you said was, this is what you said, quote, I would not have taken bets on seeing it in my lifetime.
Yes.
Speak to that.
Well, I mean, I have been working on civil rights for LGBT people since, I think, the early 90s. And my experience was, we get 2 inches forward and we get kicked back 6 feet, you know, and then we get, 6 feet forward and we get kicked back 60 years. And it just went on and on and on. And I think that I never could afford to believe emotionally or spiritually that it was never going to happen, but I really didn't think I would live to see it.
Never.
I don't think I really believed I would see it in my lifetime.
Mm-hmm. And so here we are.
Here we are.
Decisions made. And on that day, I think you got a phone call from someone. Who was that someone?
Well, my brother. My brother called me to celebrate, to congratulate, and to join in the beauty of what had happened and the justice of what had happened.
Mm-hmm. So let me ask a question. Why was that so huge?
Oh, well, part of my story is that the homophobia in my family was pretty rampant, and it wasn't always overt. It was actually rarely overt, but it was fairly relentless. And as a result of that, I was fairly much ostracized from my family and really lost connection with my brother. And I'm 7 years older than he is. And, you know, I can still remember when he was a little kid and I just was madly in love with him and loved changing his little socks with, you know, the red stripes on the tops and zipping up the zippers on his shorts and taking him places and being so proud he was my brother. And it was a very big loss that he just wasn't in my life after I was in college.
Mm-hmm. So you're on the story. So tell us, why wasn't he in your life? What happened?
Well, actually, the two of us have had to put the story together, and pieces continue to grow. The best that I can tell you is that the messages that he got when he was still very young and I was in college was that, you know, I had just done something so horrible, like it couldn't be spoken about, and that the message was I wasn't welcomed, and then there would be some mixed messaging that maybe I was kind of still a nice person, but not welcome, and very mixed messaging. I think he actually can address that more clearly than I, because he was there getting the messages.
Well, let's ask him. Mark, your messages that you got when you were young? From
well,
your family?
I think it's probably important to set the context that, you know, this was the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And as Ann said, you know, I'm 7 years younger than Ann, but I'm 55 now. And so I'm looking at it from the perspective as, you know, a much older person. But I think in our discussions, which I think Ann had just said, whereas we've been piecing this together, I think if you get right down to it, at the end of the day, it was about a lot of different things, but it was about the time and the acceptance of the gay and lesbian, you know, just the whole LGBT community. I think it was about our family. And it's not uncommon in my experience, that families back then were not accepting. There was shame involved, there was guilt, there was anger, there were a lot of mixed messages, and I think that's about that simple and about that complicated. But in essence, we have other brothers and sisters, and our family was basically given mixed messages that, you know, Anne's a nice person, but at the same time, you know, we really don't want to interact with her. And as the younger brother, it was never really clear to me what that was about for a long, long time. And that resulted in Ann and I really not communicating for decades. And it was only when both of us were older and there was a sort of a coming together, just not really by happenstance, but sort of by circumstance, that the minute that we got back together, we were able to sort of put the whole history of it together initially, and then we've been talking about it for 12 or 13 years since then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Mark, I understand. This is Diana. I understand that it was in the 70s, but I'm just curious about, I mean, you being 13, did you ask, like, where's my sister? I mean, were you able to do that or not?
Well, our family was a little unique. We all went to boarding school. And Anne had gone off to school, so that was my first experience of, oh, my sister has gone off to school. And I think I knew Anne was gay when I was 17. I went to visit her and her girlfriend at the time, and it wasn't a big issue for me on a one-on-one basis. But what ended up happening was our parents were both divorced and both unified in sort of a rejection of Anne. And it's one element that Anne was gay, but it was also just about this sort of unspoken thing about, you know, we're really a disconnected family, and one element was that Anne was gay. So it's not the easiest story in the world to tell, but at the heart of it, it was about partially my father's homophobia, my mother's issues around Anne being gay, and the very mixed messages. And for me, I think it just became, it was easier to go along and get along, and I just let it go, much to my disappointment for many years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, yeah, I'm going to have you speak in a second, Anne. But, yeah, I'm just feeling my heart pounding here and sadness coming up for me because there's so many families in this situation. And so, Anne, I just wanted to check in with you and, like, what's happening with you as you listen to your brother. And I know you've heard it, but now live here.
Well, the first thing is I'm just so proud. That's the very first thing. And the second thing is it does resurrect, you know, some pain. And I think the third thing is that it validates a lot because I was very much on the outside. I really didn't know what these messages were. I knew that I'd been ostracized. I knew intuitively it was because I was gay, although nobody told me that was the reason I was ostracized. But because I was ostracized and I had no connection, there was also no validation for what was going on, and it left me very confused and deep sense of rejection and great loss. But there was really no way for me to put together how to deal with that or who to talk to about that because the larger culture wasn't talking about these issues either. So it was very lonely. It was very isolating. For some reason I don't understand, I never felt ashamed of being gay. How I managed to bypass that, I have no idea. But I did feel incredible isolation and loneliness around that.
Mm-hmm. So you're saying you were out pretty much otherwise?
I was out entirely by the time I was 20. I wasn't running around saying to people, hello, I'm Anne and I'm a lesbian. But I had a partner when I was my last year in college. I moved in with that partner. I made it very clear to people that that's what I was doing with my life. No secrets, no hiding, no nothing. I just don't think I was using the word lesbian a lot. But it was very clear to people that I was gay, and I was quite comfortable with it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So
And Diane, if I could just speak to that for just a second. Mm-hmm. I agree with Anne that I think that... in retrospect, the isolation, it was a really good word, and I think it was somewhat perpetuated, as Anne was saying a minute ago, that it was as much unspoken but clearly present in our family. And the unspoken part of it, it had a lot of impact for not only me, but I think our other siblings. And I guess my message to people would be is not speaking about it is just as bad as being overt and rejecting somebody out loud. Mm-hmm. And that's a hard way to live, you know, as siblings or as a family.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for that.
Yeah, thanks, Mark.
Yeah. But that insight can only come with years of experience. I mean, a 13-year-old boy wouldn't know that, you know?
Or necessarily a 30-year-old man.
Uh-huh. When did you come to that conclusion? You say maybe not 30-year-old man and you're 55.
Well, I think the simple story is the way that Anne and I reconnected started with, I have three children, and my daughter was about 15. And my kids certainly knew that Anne was my sister, but they'd never had any connection with her. And that's what really started our reconnection. And when I arbitrarily picked a 30-year-old man, it was really more like, you know, a 40-year-old man. And my daughter started asking questions about Anne.
How old was she when she started asking?
She's about 15.
Okay.
And, you know, she's saying to me, well, you know, who is my Aunt Anne? And it's, okay, well, and I was never, I've never been ashamed. I've never been anything but proud of Anne since I've known her. And when I say since I've known her, you know, I really didn't know Anne from the time I was young until we became, you know, reacquainted, I don't know, 12, 14 years ago. And I was suddenly confronted with, you know, sort of having to say to my daughter, well, this is my sister, this is our history. And that led to, well, let's meet her.
What do you think
about
that?
So when I say you come to it over time, you know, you can get great messages, but only when you're kind of ready to receive them.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, and in that moment when your 15-year-old said, well, let's meet her, what did your body do? What did your head do? What did your heart do?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Probably a bit of panic. I'm sure I felt a little overwhelmed. Boy, that's a big question.
Mm-hmm.
I also think there was a little bit of sense of relief because it wasn't consciously ever about Anne being gay or not being gay. It was more about being estranged. So in the same way that my daughter wanted to know my sister, it was me saying I want to get to know my sister again. So, you know, my daughter and my other two kids, we all of us kind of came together and got to know Anne somewhat at the same time. So my dealing with my daughter was about initially explaining, you know, this is who Anne is, and, you know, we just sort of have been apart for a really long time. I'm sure I didn't give her a very detailed answer. And I think the real answer more likely came when we actually were all together, if that makes any sense to you.
So yeah.
It makes sense to me, Mark, because I think it was being present to each other and, you know, being able to laugh and talk seriously and do other things besides just talk about being gay. It normalized who we were as family, and that allowed the other conversations to happen.
And Diane, I think now that I'm thinking about it, I do think that when my daughter asked me, it brought up a lot of old stuff. It brought up a lot of old history, and it brought up a lot of old family stuff in terms of all the silence and, you know, that very loud, nonverbal ostracizing of Anne. Mm-hmm. And probably, you know, a little bit of shame for me.
Mm-hmm.
But also, you know, an opportunity to sort of maybe, you know, deal with it and reconnect with Anne.
Well, the way I'm feeling right now, this is Sheridan, the way I'm feeling right now, Mark, is, you know, I'm wiping the tears away from my eyes because how courageous of you to be speaking like this. I mean, how many people want to just keep that shame private? Or how many people wouldn't have taken the challenge of their daughter and they would have just, you know, sloughed it off and continued the cycle of silence as you were raised when you were 13 and 15? I mean, you really stepped up, man, and you probably are a fabulous human being, and I'm just so honored to have you as our guest right now, and I thank you very much for being here and, you know, taking your time 11:30 at night on, you know, in New York. Mm-hmm. So thank you.
I'm happy to do it, and my sister's a wonderful person, and I will share this with you, that I think that part of it, and Anne and I were talking about this earlier, is I give our father a lot of credit for this. And I will, and may he rest in peace. He died many years ago, but he was a contradiction in terms in many ways. He was a very liberal man. He was also very homophobic. He was a World War II vet. He was a person of that generation. And at the same time, he was one of the first people to, as a white man, to advocate the NAACP in Columbus, Ohio, in 1963. He was willing to bring a Jewish man to his country club of all white WASPy men. And I vividly remember that as a young kid, how much grief he took over it. And he was a very courageous guy, and he raised us that way. And I don't make a big distinction between racism and bigotry towards, you know, gay and lesbians. I think it's all one and the same. And those are core values, I think, that we were raised with. So when you say it's really courageous, I think it's really more about just following the way you were raised, mm-hmm. you know, and having the courage of that conviction.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's I think that's what it was about for me when my daughter was asking me about Anne and the larger question of, you know, why are you guys estranged? And well, part of it was that you know, what we'd been told or not told, and then another part of it was, you know, just this opportunity to know that this was something that would be a good thing to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Go ahead. Anne, you want to say something?
Yeah. I so appreciate your bringing up our dad, Mark. He did influence me greatly, too. I was, you know, I think I was like 16 years old when I joined my first march or something around civil rights and carried on that for many, many years. And I know I got that directly from my father. And here is the supreme irony. This same man who you just heard about beat the living daylights out of my older brother when he was 16 years old, yelling, "You faggot, you faggot, you goddamn faggot." And my 16-year-old brother left home and never returned. And that's the same man who ostracized me and wanted to disown me for being queer. And I've long since come to understand exactly where that came from, and long since forgiven my father at a very deep level. This was not about my father as an individual. This was about institutionalized homophobia. This was a man who had grown up in the 30s and the 40s. He was an American vet. You know, when he was in the army, being queer, you were a traitor. You could have been killed for that. You could have been, you know, just shot on sight for being queer. He grew up Catholic. You know, the ultimate sin was being gay. I mean, this was a man who didn't know that he didn't know that he didn't know. And he was not unique. He was not unique. And to me, that is the really deep pain of institutionalized homophobia, that people don't know that they don't know that they don't know. And the harm and the suffering that they themselves are engaged in feeling that, and that they perpetuate. They don't know that they don't know. And I really believe that if my father were alive today, he died in 1983, long before the whole gay civil rights thing even started. And he died and made it very clear to all of my siblings he didn't even want me at his deathbed because I was gay. That was the only reason. I was there anyway. If that man were alive today, I really believe that he would have caught up with himself and that he would perhaps be on the other phone too. It's an irony, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, in a way, he was in his own prison.
Absolutely.
Of the times. And,
absolutely.
You know, we really, I mean, if he were alive today, he'd be free of that.
He would be. And I think that is exactly what has happened with these Supreme Court decisions, is that we are all freed. It is not just gay and lesbian people who are freed.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
That's right. And speaking of freedom, yes, we're going to listen to Linda Tillery's Freedom Time.
All around us, people are starving and dying.
And if you've just tuned in, you're listening to Living Proof on Outbeat Radio with Diana and Sheridan. And our guests tonight are Anne McGivern and her brother Mark McGivern on the phone. Are you still there with us, Mark?
I am.
Okay, great. And that was Linda Tillery singing her wonderful song called Freedom Time. And we were just talking about freedom and how, Anne, you were saying if your dad was alive now, that you think he would be free from the prison of homophobia and the times that he was raised in. So what other people do you think were freed by this this whole decision? What are your thoughts these days right now?
Oh, I think our whole culture is getting freer and being freed by these decisions. I was talking to Diana earlier about a story that's now about 15 or maybe 15 years old, a neighbor I had who was, I'd lived in the same house for 10 years. She and her husband were there. They were quite elderly. The man and the couple died. The woman was there alone. I became quite close to her. I'd check in on her and I'd take her to the doctors and that kind of thing. And one day she asked me to take her to the emergency room. It wasn't anything terribly significant, but she needed to be there. So there we were behind our white curtain for what felt like 25 hours, but probably was really only four. And somewhere in the middle of that time, very spontaneously, she started telling me this story. She had known all along that I was gay. So she just very spontaneously started telling me about her brother and how her brother had had a partner for 35 years. So she was clearly telling me her brother was gay. She may have even used that word. I don't remember. What I do remember is that she burst into tears in the middle of this story. And her tears were from this very deep place of grief. that when her brother had died, his partner of 35 years was never spoken to again by anyone in her family. And she was feeling this incredible grief at having lost her brother-in-law, that she was telling me how much she loved the man. And this deep shame. How could we have done that to him? And what must that have been like? And that was a very profound moment for me, that there was this, I think she was like 82 or 84. She was an old woman, having looked back on her life and realized what she had lost and how she had suffered. She's free today. That woman, all the people like her, all the 92-year-olds and the 79-year-olds in nursing homes who have a queer kid or a queer grandkid, they're much freer because of this. All the, you know, all the people who were thrown out of their churches for performing gay marriages, they're free now. They're free.
Yeah.
All the people who entered into sham marriages, they're free. All the people who were deprived of the love of a gay parent, they're free. We're all freer. Our whole culture is freer. That we have, as a culture, basically changed history to say this is not okay anymore. This is not okay. And I'm not so naive that I don't think there's still a lot of homophobia out there. Mm. But I think the culture has changed, and that people don't want to live with this kind of hatred and this kind of shame and losing their families and their careers and their parents. And I think we're free.
So, yeah. So many years of just heartache and pain. For what? Yeah. I hear
for
you.
What?
Thank you for your passion. I love that. And I know, Ann, you wrote a letter. I don't know, Mark, do you know about this letter Ann wrote to the editor?
Oh, yeah. I asked her if she'd send it to New York Times.
Oh, beautiful. Well, she's going to read it, and then we'll hear your opinions about it and how you felt about it. So, Ann, will you please do us and the audience a pleasure of reading this letter you wrote?
I will indeed. And I will tell you, before I sent this letter to anybody, I sent it to my brother, Mark.
Oh, my word.
So, sure, I'm happy to read the letter. Dear editors, the Supreme Court decisions about Prop 8 and DOMA are a welcome relief to those of us who have suffered illegal discrimination for decades. By us, I don't just mean lesbian and gay folks, but all Americans who have suffered because of this institutionalized bigotry. Servicemen and women, families that were destroyed, clergy who were fired for performing marriages, children taught to be ashamed of their parents and deprived of their love, parents who blamed themselves for creating a queer kid, lovers who ended relationships because they feared job discrimination, men and women who entered sham marriages to pass, professionals fired from careers, kids bullied on playgrounds, harassment lawsuits. The list is longer than this space allows. Lest we think that the Supreme Court gave us something, let us remember that the Constitution declared us all equal. The rights that have been wrongfully and painfully denied to millions of Americans are restored. May the hearts and the minds that were raised in a culture of homophobia be restored to original grace. The work towards equality continues. Ignorance is slow to give way to enlightenment, but my flame is burning brightly with hope for the future.
Beautiful letter.
Beautiful.
Oh, thank you.
Did they publish it?
The Press Democrat did, yes. Much to my honor.
Mm. And did you send it to the New York Times?
I did. But they didn't print it. Mm. And that's fine.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Thank you for sharing that.
Oh, my pleasure.
Wow.
Thank you for letting me read it. Mm-hmm.
So, Mark, when you got the letter in the email, whatever, what happened? How did you respond to your sister?
Well, what ended up happening was, I as you said a minute ago, I live in New York, and I got an email from my girlfriend at, I don't know, 11 o'clock in the morning, whatever it was, and she goes, "DOMA's dead." And I was just so, I wasn't actually surprised, but I was unbelievably happy. I actually was more optimistic. I thought it had a chance of being defeated. And I was just ecstatic. And I think my first call, Ann and I talked very quickly after that. And then when she sent me the letter, it really produced a conversation between Anne and myself about this whole context of the impact of everything that DOMA had done, not just to us and our family, but to so many people. And, I feel very fortunate that I live in New York, and one of the reasons why I like living here is because it's a melting pot. And I experience New York as being a much more welcoming place. I also travel for a living, and I spend a lot of time in other parts of the country, including Florida, Texas, and other places like that. And I have seen very overt behavior from people about their response to DOMA and how mad they are about it. And what it did for me was to say to myself, I can now have a dialogue with people who are not as open-minded or whatever the right word may be to, in other parts of the country or people of other beliefs, and have a dialogue about it. I think that's the importance of DOMA. And what happened mm-hmm. is that it's giving people permission to talk about this now. It's here. It's happening. And I think that there is a very subtle sense of relief for a lot of people.
Yeah, your letter has given me food for thought, because I really hadn't gone that far as impacts towards other people who might be straight. Who have gay people in their life, kids, parents, etc. I mean, I must say that nobody from my family called me.
Oh.
My sisters, my mom, my dad, nobody mm-hmm. on the day that it passed, on the day that it passed. So mm-hmm. at least I don't remember getting a call. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so I mean, I'm impressed and with your letter. I'm impressed that your brother called you, and you know, quite moved by it, to be honest with you. But also, when you wrote this letter, you're giving people permission to say that it's okay to be gay, because the law says it's okay to be gay.
Yes, 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 yes.
And yes. It's like they don't have the law to back them up, like saying, well, it's illegal, so it must be bad.
Yes.
You know, and I really hadn't thought about
yes.
that. And I mean, I'm an educated woman. I'm 57 years old. But I didn't really think about it till I heard your letter. So, you know, mm-hmm. praises to you. And maybe you impacted some other people listening as well.
May it be
well,
so.
I would say, you know, as a straight man, that my takeaway from it is the number of conversations that I've had with a lot of other people in the last month or more about this. And I find ways to bring it up because I'm curious as to what other people's reactions are.
Wow.
And my sense is from talking to probably a dozen people about it, you know, of various different persuasions, from liberal to conservative, Republican to Democrat, you know, heterosexual people, is that, and I might be biased because of the people that I'm associated with, but I find that people are saying it's about time. Mm. That is, I've only heard two negative reactions to it, and I'm not trying to be disrespectful of anybody, but one was from a very religious Catholic person who just said, "This is just in my world, it's still just wrong," and that was a personal thing, but it wasn't said with animosity. It wasn't said with hatred. It was just said, you know, this is just something that's against my belief. You know, whether it's a law or not, it just goes against my belief. But it wasn't said in an angry way. But my experience has been is that the people I've talked with about it that actually know what it was about are saying, this is a good thing. And I wasn't the one who originally made the linkage between basically segregation and desegregation and, you know, the DOMA Act. I mean, here we are. We spent 50 years fighting for racial equality. Now we've had another, you know, ongoing long-term battle to make equal rights, you know, for gay and lesbians. And, you know, as I said to Anne earlier, what's next, women? You know, I'm kind of making a joke, mm-hmm. but you know, it's we've spent decades trying to make racial equality. Now we're trying to make gay and lesbian equality. I think it's a process, but I think people that are hearing about DOMA are being given some permission because it is the law now. Mm-hmm. And I've experienced there's some sense of relief with a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, most definitely. But, you know, we still got a lot of more states to come through with, you know, just the freedom of that, you know, LGBT. So I'm just hearing all the love between Mark, you, and your sister Anne. And
she's my best friend.
yeah, you know, and I would like you to speak to how do you feel? How has it been for you to grow this relationship? Because this is really huge, you coming together this way, in this beautiful way, heartfelt way. So, Anne, you want to start? What?
I'm having a hard time not crying. And they're proud tears. I'm nothing I want to hide. It's like a resurrection, you know, a rebirth in many ways. I'm so grateful for my brother. I'm so proud of my brother. I feel so very close to him. There's nothing in the world that I can't talk to my brother about. He has said that to me, that there's nothing that he can't or won't talk to me about. We've both been through in the last couple of years some difficult times. And he has been my greatest supporter, my greatest coach, my greatest tissue box. And I know I've been that for him too. And I don't say that out of ego. I say that out of true joy of really knowing we share something very special and unique. And to come from a place of being completely ostracized and not belonging to this kind of belonging is just incredibly beautiful.
I think you said it perfectly. I don't think I could say it any better than that.
Thanks, Marco.
But you're proud of your sister. I hear that. And you're happy for her.
You know, I just have to say, without getting into a lot of, you know, detail about it, that I know about, you know, the personal difficulty that Anne's had is for standing up to be, you know, to be out there and to be honest about it and be true about it. She's paid a heavy price. And I got to respect anybody who has the courage to stand up for what they believe in and not do it for a day, a week, a month, a year, a decade, but decades. And she's been doing that for a long time, and she's kept her integrity over it. And there have been a couple of times that I've actually, there was a particular time a number of years ago where I was really afraid for her. Mm. Because of the situations that she was in as a lesbian, trying to basically buck the system. And it was ugly, and I was worried for her. And she felt that she had to do it, and she gained my respect over that and many other things. But, you know, she wasn't going to let her principles go. And I think that anybody who can have the courage of their convictions and stand up like that deserves, you know, is certainly worthy of all the friendship and love you can give them. Put it that way.
Thank you, Mark.
Beautiful. I'm thinking.
Do I just have the best brother?
Oh my
in the
gosh,
world?
You guys are just
He's
all
the best.
Oh, it's beautiful when it happens this way. And I'm remembering when we came into the studio right before we got on air, you told me something that your brother said to you. If you don't mind repeating that about this phone call, about this interview tonight, to share that.
Yeah, 10 minutes before I walked in the door, I was on the phone with my brother, and I said to him, thank you so much for doing this. I'm really proud of you, and I'm so grateful. And he said to me, he said, I know this is very important to you. And it's important to me, too. But this is my gift to you. Hmm. And it is indeed a gift that I just am so blessed by.
Hmm. Okay. Beautiful. Beautiful. I'm just noticing you and just watching you. And she's beautiful, Mark.
Oh, no.
So and I even got to come here with no makeup. You see, that was the best part, Mark.
Oh, wow. So thank you so much for that. Yeah. Thanks, Mark.
You're welcome.
Yeah. So listen, let me see. We have a few more minutes. So I think this is a great opportunity, great time for you both to offer advice. We always like to say offer advice, put you on the spot here a little bit, but you have a lot of history, a lot of wisdom. You've gone through a lot together, and there's so many more families out there who's probably listening to this radio show, this and what you've shared. So whatever you can offer in form of suggestions or advice or encouragement, we would love to hear. And maybe we can, let's start with Mark first. Okay. Mark, you ready?
Oh, boy. I guess my advice would be is to be looking for the opportunity if you're in a family that has somebody that's, you know, LGBT, to look for an opportunity to talk about it, because not talking about it is far worse for everybody, including the person who doesn't want to deal with it. And that it's very freeing, and it may be painful. It probably will bring up a lot of other stuff, because Being gay is one part of your life. It's not all of it. And families are not just comprised of gay people and straight people.
Thank you, Mark.
And there's always more layers to it than just whether you're gay or not. But at the what I and Anne, why I were talking about this not long ago was that people oftentimes use, oh my gosh, you're gay, or you're lesbian, or you're this, or you're that, as a last resort, as sort of like, you know, I can't say anything else, so I'll say that. And that seems to trump everything. And in fact, it usually doesn't. And in families, if you're not talking about it, you're just losing really valuable time, because life is short. So my advice is pick up the phone, write a letter, send an email, do something.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you for that.
So, you're welcome.
Ann, what about you? How would you offer advice?
I very much appreciate what Mark has said. If you haven't had the conversation, start it. Don't wait for somebody else. Start it any way you can. Nobody's going to remember the first 20 words you say. They're going to remember how you feel. Just start the conversation. The second thing I would say is, if you are disconnected from your family, and I know many of us are, find some family in your community, because that kind of isolation kills people, and we don't want any more of our sisters and brothers dying.
We thank you so much for being our guests tonight, Anne and Mark. Thank you, Mark.
Thank you for being on. I appreciate it.
And thank you, Anne, so much for coming into the studio tonight.
Oh, my dear, my deep pleasure and very humble thank you. And thank you, Mark. I love you.
I love you too, sis.
Oh, I love it.
So we want to thank everyone out there for listening to our show, Living Proof, for tonight. We want to remind you that you too can be living proof, that you can rise up, be courageous, just like Mark has shown, just like we have learned from Anne and all her work and all her willingness to share her life. You too can be proud and vibrant to tell your stories in our community. We'd like to thank you for being here with us tonight and invite you to join us again next month. Until then,
good night.
step out of the ordinary. I can feel my soul ascending. I'm on my way, can't stop me now. And you can. So many answers, I don't know.
There are so many answers.
Realize that to question is how we grow.
To question is to grow.
So I step out of the ordinary. I can feel my soul ascending. I'm on my way, can't stop. So do it today, yeah, 'cause I can see you.
Support for Outbeat Radio on KRCB-FM comes from members and from the Healdsburg Guitar Festival, August 9th through the 11th at the Hyatt Vineyard Creek in Santa Rosa. The festival features the exhibit and sale of custom guitars, workshops on guitar playing, composing, and performance. Ongoing concerts on two stages all 3 days. Tickets and information at festivalofguitars.com or by calling 800-477-4437.